Hey, everybody, it's the old man here. Have to turn up my volume if I'm going to get this to work right. Good to see you. It is Monday, April 8th, and if you missed the main show this morning, we had Shonda did a author highlights interview with Jared Michaud. He is the author of a book called Bright Star. It's a sci-fi book, and it's due for publication on the 16th of April. So we did an author highlight review with him, and we're going to give that to you right now. So as soon as the music's done, we'll get into it. Enjoy it.
Well, good morning, Jared. Is it Michaud?
It's Michaud. We've Americanized it. It's sort of a French name, but it looks like Michaud, but you pronounce it Michaud.
Okay. So we are talking to Jared Michaud, and you are going to tell us about your new book called Bright Star. Is that correct?
I am, and you may have to hurry me up as I go here because there's a lot to talk about.
Okay, so first, let me tell people.
I don't want to drag this too long.
It's supposed to hit shelves April 16th. And before you tell me what it's about, tell me, did you traditionally publish it?
Well, I did, and there's actually a story behind it that we need to get to. So
okay, let's do that. Do you want to start there?
That's a fine place to start. We can start wherever. So
okay, so tell me how this book came about.
Absolutely. Well, that actually goes back to when I was about 12, and I'll do that part in a few sentences. I had a tough growing up time, and I used to escape into my imagination, as I'm sure a lot of kids do. And I started building an imaginary world when I was, 8, 9, 10. I loved Star Wars. I loved Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card. There were various stories that I loved, and I started building a world in my head. And when I was about 12 years old, I started writing a book that was the prequel to Bright Star. And that book never got published, but between the time I was 12 and I was 16, I wrote about 250,000 words, which if you were to read it in normal book size, that'd be something in the realm of 1,000 pages. And I got to the end of that, and I realized that what I had was absolutely terrible. It was so bad that it was a waste of paper, but it had been a wonderful use of time because that's how I learned how to write.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, I didn't have the skill as a writer to fix it at that point or to do something with it that was useful. So I kind of shelved it. And I wrote some poetry. I did some other stuff. About the time I was 22, I tried to do some serious writing again, and it didn't go quite the way I wanted. And so I decided that I couldn't – if I didn't understand life well enough to write and have it work the way I thought it should, then I just wasn't ready yet. So I shelved it again. I waited another 18 years and or 16, whatever. And when I was about 38, I picked it up again and started writing the story that I had written the prequel to. I started writing Bright Star, which is what I should have written in the first place. And so a little bit of context there. I had been working for a family business for about 8 years, and I needed to leave for unrelated reasons. So quit my job, and I'm like, well, this is a good time to write. We've got some savings. I can do this for a few months, right? So picked it up, started writing. Took me about 6 months to get the book written the way I wanted it to be. The whole time I'm writing, I'm like, please, God, if you've got a place for this to be published or a way for me to do this, please show me. Because I had no connections to the publishing world. I had nothing. I knew nobody. And I get to the end of this writing process, and about the time I'm ready to think about self-publishing, I got two people online I asked to do things for me for the book. One I asked to be a beta reader, and he wound up being like my chief cheerleader who got me over the finish line. And then the other guy, I said, would you read this? And if you like it, would you recommend it to your followers, to the people who, listen to you? Because he had a much bigger following on social media than I did. And he said, well, I could do that. But my uncle's a publisher, right? Right, exactly. And I said, no,
I love
really?
How those I love when things work that way.
Well, okay. And so here's the amazing part to me is they have a real publishing house. This isn't just a tiny operation. They publish about 200-300 books a year. So it's a, you know, a reasonable size publishing house.
Yeah.
It's not huge. They're not doing thousands, but they're small enough to try to pay attention to their authors, and they're big enough to actually have some pull with bookstores and such. And so what I did is I submitted my manuscript to this publisher, and they have an editorial board that has to vote on it. I don't think I got special consideration, but they accepted it. So my very first query ever, I got accepted to a real publishing house. So technically this is traditionally published. It's a small publisher. They don't have quite the normal business model, but it's pretty cool if you ask me.
That is cool. Well, so I think it's interesting and fortuitous that we are talking about your book today on the eclipse day, because it's a sci-fi novel, right?
Absolutely.
So tell us what this novel is about.
Okay, so that question has about four different layers. On the most basic level, let me frame it this way. When I talk to people about my writing, I tell them there are three things that a writer tries to do. One of them, the first one, is to tell an entertaining story. And that's the base requirement. If you're not doing that, then you're failing as a writer. You have to tell a good story.
Right. And nobody wants to read you if you're not telling them something they're interested in.
Right. Or if you're doing what a lot of the mainstream outlets are doing, and they're preaching more than they're telling stories now. Mm-hmm. They're preaching right. A worldview or an agenda or whatever. And I didn't want to do that. So like I say, the first thing, you have to tell an entertaining story. And to me, the most entertaining story that I had come up with, that I had, you know, spent years sort of thinking on and dreaming on, was the story of the Energemetra 6 universe. And when I was a kid, I made myself the main character. As an adult, I sort of pulled myself out of that and made the main character into something different than, and maybe a little more, maybe a little less, but, you know, not myself. And so when you ask what it's about, I would say that it starts out with, imagine that there's a universe that's right just over the edge of reality from ours, that you can't quite touch it, but it's just over the edge of reality from ours. And like C.S. Lewis' universe, if just the right thing happened, you might get transported there, and you might spend some time there, especially as a young person.
Yeah.
And so the main character in the story has a pretty rough life, and he winds up getting transported to this universe, and he, all of a sudden, everything's changed for him. He is autistic, but in this new universe, because of the way his brain works, because he can see patterns so clearly, the Energemetra 6, the energy fields that underlie the universe, are available for him to use, and he can use them in a way that most people can't even quite imagine, because it's so natural to him, because he's so good at manipulating these patterns. So I wanted for my universe to have very much a science fiction feel, where they're in spaceships and they explore the universe that way. And it's kind of an infinite universe. There's more to explore than you could ever actually get to. But by the same token, I wanted some kind of special magic system. And so this kind of drew back to Star Wars, because Star Wars played a huge part in my own, you know, imaginings growing up. So it's a science fiction setting with something that isn't quite magic. I wanted it to be a little more physics-based than that, a little bit more solid than that.
So it sounds like you are writing for middle graders, but also appealing to adults. Is that true?
I would say more young adults to adults. My eight-year-old didn't really wasn't really that interesting to him.
Okay.
My 11-year-old loved it. She thought it was great, but she's very bookish. My 14-year-old thought it was pretty cool, but he isn't very bookish in that sense. He doesn't hit the books as hard as my daughter does. So, I wrote it specifically for like the 13 to 16 age range, but also for adults. Yes.
Yeah. Well, anybody who loves C.S. Lewis would, it sounds like, would love this story.
Yeah, though, you know, I would read C.S. Lewis to my 8-year-old and he would like it. And this is a little older than that. But okay. Part of that is because I wrote it for the age range where I particularly needed that sort of, I don't know, whatever it was that captured me in Ender's Game. It was when I was in my early teens that I particularly needed that help. And that's what that was where I targeted it. But, you know, I wrote it with basically anybody in mind. There's no real limits to the audience. So long as it interests somebody, they should be able to read it and it would be fun. I would read it today and enjoy it. So,
okay. So can I read the little synopsis that you emailed to us so that the listeners can get the little synopsis,
right? Yeah, please.
So Bright Star is the beginning of an epic space adventure that introduces readers to Nate, a boy desperate to escape the prison of an ordinary life made unbearable by his autism. When he is unexpectedly transported to another universe, Nate's perceived disability is transformed into a near superpower. In the Aurora Galaxy, where his arrival has been prophesied for thousands of years, Nate finds the weight of expectations difficult to bear. After being greeted by an ancient ally, Nate begins gathering a misfit group of odds from every corner of the universe. Nate's odyssey, which starts in the most prestigious school in civilization, will end battling monsters from the darkest imaginations of an ancient captive Earth. Coping with greater and greater adversity, Nate finds himself confronted by enemies who all seem to be connected in suspicious ways. In the end, Nate must stand before the Lightmaker himself, who sent Nate to the Aurora Galaxy in the first place. I think that sounds excellent and interesting, and I can't wait to read it. You also say that you like talking about the reason you wrote it, and you allude to having some difficulties in your early life, and you don't have to get specific, but what can you let us know a little bit about what your reasons were?
Absolutely. Well, I told you that the first thing that a writer has to do is to tell an entertaining story, and I'm sure you agree. And then the other two that I like to point to, and I don't want to speak for anybody else, but one is to put some part of yourself into the characters, into the story, to make it sort of resonate with people. Because at least for me, the stories that I resonate with are the ones where I identify with the characters and they speak to me. And so the second thing I tried to do was that. Go ahead.
Well, you are the one that puts the heart into your story, and people like to read stories with heart of any kind, good, bad, indifferent, something that puts human qualities in. That's what sets us apart from the AI writing of the world.
Absolutely. And that's a whole other topic, and it's one I like to talk about, but you're absolutely right. And that, to me, is the second thing we try to do as a writer. The third thing is a little bit more abstract, maybe, or a little bit more difficult to put a finger on. But I'm going to have to pull on a little bit more context for this. It's going to take me a minute. But when we tell a story, it's like a painter who creates a great painting. He manages to reach out into the world and to find some kind of truth that's out there, and to gather it up and to put it into his work in such a way that it leaves it in front of us in a form that is something we can appreciate, something we can sort of get our mind around.
Yeah. In writing, so they typically call that theme. You're doing a universally resonant theme that readers can grab onto.
Yeah. I would go a little further. I like to use, you know, what J.R.R. Tolkien called myth, which is sort of grabbing onto a story that has roots in something deeper than just something you made up, but there's something that resonates with everybody because it's a story that has some truth in it, some really resounding truth. And that's what I try to pull on.
I like the way
email
that you sent us.
Go ahead, sorry.
Myth guides society forward, and regaining society's lost myth is one of the most important steps in restoring sanity to the world. And we are in a world going crazy. So I like the way.
Well, the way I like to put it actually is, you know, there was a guy named Andrew Breitbart who, he died a few years back. He was kind of a media guy, and he liked to say that politics is downstream of culture. And what he meant by that is that the way we live our lives sort of determines the way politics can be acted out, right? It sort of sets the boundaries for the playing field of politics. And I like to go further than that. I like to say that culture is downstream of faith or ideology. So whatever you believe determines the way you live, which sets the playing field for politics. And myth lives somewhere between faith and culture. Myth points back to the ideology, the faith that we believe in, and it points forward to lead the way for the culture. So when we look at myth today, things like, I have a couple of interesting examples, but if you contrast something like The Lord of the Rings, the world that Tolkien created, with Game of Thrones, there's an immediate obvious contrast there. Tolkien had a very strong good versus evil, very strong light and darkness, and those themes, where Game of Thrones, it's sort of just washed out. It's like there's all kinds of horrible things going on in the story, and the good guys don't win or lose or anything, but everybody kind of dies, and it's a huge mess. And in the end, whether it's might makes right or luck or something, that's sort of a great reflection of the way we think of the modern world, where the way Tolkien wrote his myth was sort of reflective of the world at his time. And another sort of interesting example, I don't know how perfect this is, but it sort of struck me. My wife made the comment a while back that there aren't any modern stories where the dragons are the bad guys. The dragons are always the good guys in modern stories, or they're sort of pets or mounts or friends or something, but they're not the bad guys. Where when you look at the old stories, the dragons are the opponent. The dragons are the bad guys. Even in Lord of the Rings, the dragon's not a good guy.
Right.
And when you look at the Bible, at scripture, what do we see? We see the old dragon, Satan, is the opponent and the enemy of mankind. And so when we look at modern myth, it has flipped on its head.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Jared? Jared, we lost you, Jared.
Okay.
Uh-oh. I don't know what happened to Jared. Jared, we lost you there for a minute.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you now, yeah.
That's very strange.
It is. You dropped out where you said it's flipped on its head.
That was where I had stopped anyway.
Okay.
I think that's a very interesting...
Go ahead.
We do apologize for any technical difficulties that might be occurring, because we've been getting a lot of complaints about this Podbean app update lately, like timing out on people to where people have to come back in the live shows, or you're getting the unstable network message on your screen.
Yeah, I apologize for that. So how long is your book? How many pages, how many words, how many chapters?
Well, actually, there's a bit of a funny story there, too. When I sent it into the publisher, I had about 110,000 words, which would have translated to something in the realm of 300-400 pages, probably 400 pages. And they told me, well, for a modern young adult book, that's a little too long. Is there any way we can, like, cut some of that off. So what I ended up doing, because I had written it episodically, I sort of cut it in half. So what Bright Star is the first half of the book. And I took the second half, and I'm actually working on finishing the edit on it right now to turn it into a second novel. Mm-hmm. So it's about 55,000 words, something in there. And it wound up being around 190 pages, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 50 to 80,000 is typically what they look for. Anything over 100, they're typically saying Stephen King can do that, but not everyone else can. Just because the reader sure. gets fatigued when a story is that long. So
especially as a first installment.
Right.
You know,
right.
If I were five stories in and I wanted to do that, that might be a bit of a different, because then you've got an audience that's followed along with you to that point and they'll want more. But for a very first book, that's fine. It didn't bother me.
Yeah. So do we get to find out early on that Nate feels at odds with the world? And then I'm guessing we get to really resonate with him and we get invested in what will happen with him. And that means we cheer him on as he goes and figures out that he can kind of command this other world.
I sure hope that's the way it works. as a writer, I'm not the guy to judge how well my work actually lands.
Well, and that is interesting because as writers, we try to write it that way. We want to write the story that grabs readers in that way. But sometimes the story takes over and it doesn't necessarily behave the way you expected it to. Did you struggle with this story at all, or did it kind of just flow for you?
Oh, you know, in a sense, writing this story was incredibly, incredibly difficult. And before I get to the bottom of that statement, there is one bit that I think you'll appreciate. When I started writing this, I didn't intend to make Nate autistic or anything. Instead, it was he was kind of supposed to be just a normal kid who was transported to this other universe. And I wasn't intending on giving a lot of the background or making him have a difficult life. But I got partway through and it kind of just struck me that was what needed to happen, that was what fit. And the more I thought about it, the more I decided it was true. And so eventually I went ahead and just bit the bullet and did it and wrote it that way. And I think it worked out okay. Mm-hmm. But, it wasn't what I had originally intended. Go ahead.
Jared, so you're saying that the main character in the book has autism?
Yes, sir.
You know, that's really interesting because this is Autism Awareness Month.
Huh. I didn't know that.
I just dawned on me, and I think, well, how great is it that we're talking to you about your book with the main character being autism, and this is Autism Awareness Month. Nice connection.
I sort of wrote from personal experience there. I have a touch of that to the point where I understand what it's like at some level to be the guy who can't tie his shoes but can play the piano like a, you know, mm-hmm. like a maestro, even though he's never had any training. Sure. I function pretty well, but part of me gets that. Mm-hmm. And there are ways where I don't function very well either. But the point is, I wrote that from personal experience, but I am also aware that for a lot of readers, understanding that and reading that isn't real comfortable, but I wanted to write something for a fairly general audience. So what I ended up doing is that characteristic comes through in the prologue, but I didn't pull it into the rest of the book so much because it was intended to be something that in the new universe that he goes into, it has sort of been turned into something else to teach him a lesson. Mm-hmm. And in the second book, which was the second half of the first book, but in the second book, I sort of explore that a little more where...
Jared, we lost you again.
Oh, good grief.
You're back.
I'm back now, I guess. Yeah, yes. You know what? I think I need to shut my screensaver off on my phone or something. Every time it goes to screensaver, you're losing me. Anyway, I can fix this for the moment. I'll just make sure that I don't let it do that. Anyway, what I was saying is just that as he it's only in the prologue that you really get the experience of the autism, because I didn't really want it to be a huge turnoff for readers. And in book two, I make a point of exploring how that autism affects him and affects things a little more completely, and to bring his awareness of it back and to explore the tension there. And that was the second half of the first book, but it's okay for it to be the second book. The first book is a great introduction to him. And as Shonda said, you know, trying to help people to be sympathetic to his character and draw people into the story was my goal there. So.
Well, and statistically, I think we're at the point where about 1 in 36 people land somewhere on the spectrum. And that means that you will have a wide audience of people who can identify with this character. So so I think it's very timely. And I love the coincidence that we're talking to you about sci-fi on Eclipse Day and autism character, an autistic character in Autism Awareness Month. I think that's great. Well, I really appreciate meeting you. I think you are very well spoken. I expect you to go far, and I can't wait to read this book. So it's coming out April 16th, and please do keep us informed. Let us know where to find it. We will post this interview on theoldmanspodcast.com, and of course, as Jim said, he'll email you an MP3 version of the interview, and you can put it wherever you like. And then, keep coming back with us and let us know how it goes. I'd love to know how the publicity goes and how the sales go and how your book is received in the marketplace.
Absolutely. Thank you, Shonda. You know, one of the things I'm sure you know, but probably most people don't, as an author, I finished writing this book and getting it fully edited and everything almost a full year ago. And that's pretty fast for the publishing world. So in the meantime, I've been working on the second book, but my publisher isn't ready to put out the second book yet. So I've sort of been looking for a project to do in the midterm. And if people are interested, if you head over to my website, e6universe.com, the letter E, the number 6, universe.com. The first post there should be a link to a Kickstarter I'm doing for a little anthology of stories about characters that are appearing in this universe. I wanted to do something sort of as an in-between between the first book and the second book. And I actually timed that Kickstarter to launch at the same time as this podcast was going live today. So I thought that was kind of a cool idea. And so for anybody who's interested, I'm got that little anthology out, and some of the possible tiers, if you support the Kickstarter, you can get a copy of Bright Star, either a physical copy or an electronic copy. So nice. That's one of the ways you can get hold of it.
Okay, now tell me the name of this universe again.
It's Energemetris 6.
Energemetris, okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I am looking at that website now, energemetris6.com. Mm-hmm.
Or e6universe.com, because trying to spell the Energemetris 6 is not going to be – for most people, I kind of scratched my head and I went, you know, that's really not a great idea. So e6universe.com is the website I would send people to.
Got it.
And Shonda put it in the chat room right there for everybody.
Awesome.
And then your personal
thank you, Shonda.
Author – website is Jared N. Michaud, MICHAUD, and that is .com. I'll put that in there too. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for coming to talk to us today. I appreciate it, and we wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you. I sure appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. Thanks, Shonda. great interview. That was Jared Michaud, author of the book Bright Star, and it's going to be coming out April 16th. So thank you, everybody. Hey, if you want to listen to the whole show, download it on Podbeam, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. You can find the complete Monday show for that, because we had a lot of fun on talking about other things, including the eclipse. All right. Well, thank you very much for tuning in, and we will see you later down the road. Thank you, guys. Later, Gators.